The Fantasy Six Pack Hour. With your hosts, Joe Bob.
You're awful.
And AJ Applegar.
It's a mouthful.
Right, all right. Welcome to the Fantasy Six Pack Hour. My name is Joe Bond, founder of FantasySixPack.net. With me, as usual, donning other Hokie gear, of course, March Madness, playing on Friday night, go Hokies, is Mr. AJ Applegarth. What's up, man?
Damn right.
ACC champs, beaches. Love it. Dude, that was phenomenal, dude. After we won Saturday night, I like couldn't go to sleep, man. I was so hyped.
I would say the same.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
It was nuts. Definitely an awesome tournament. I was talking to my dad about it earlier, and you know, I'm thinking, well, if Clemson hadn't have beaten them in the last game of the season, then maybe we would have had a different run. But maybe not. I mean, I don't know. I didn't look that far into it to see how the seeding would have changed, if at all. But
yeah, probably not a whole lot. But yeah, it was great tournament. Great to see the Hokies to take down the ACC championship in basketball for the first time ever in school history. Mm-hmm. Went through the number 2, 3, and 1 seed to do it, man. That was pretty awesome. So yeah. Congrats to them, and looking forward to see them in the tournament. We got a tough road, man. Starting with Texas, great defensive team, then Purdue's like a legit top, you know, Final Four, you know, contender. That's gonna be probably the toughest one. And then even if we get by them, it's like, ooh, Kentucky, yikes. not looking good. Sorry.
Not worried about it.
I mean, we can shoot over anybody, but man, we got to stop them too. But I don't know. It's a good team, but we'll see what happens. But good luck to the Hokies. And real quick, who you got winning? Cool. Yeah, I know you've done like a 3,000, but your main
actually,
one. But
I would say the main one, I'm kind of torn between Gonzaga and I kind of like Kansas, actually.
Oof. Forever...
It's so hard to go with them.
You know my thought on Kansas. They're like, I can never pick them because they always choke somehow in the tournament.
They
do. Just can't do it.
They do. But for whatever reason, I did pick them the year that they won.
Oh,
so I kind of have like a...
Soft spot. Yeah.
A soft spot for
I get
them,
it.
Even though they
I get
screwed
it.
Me so many times
yeah.
after that.
I'm so tempted to pick Iowa beating them, but I'm not sure I'm there yet, but I definitely have Auburn getting over them.
Yeah.
I've got Zona beating Texas Tech in the final right now, but I've got a few hours to change my mind. We'll see what happens.
Well, Zona's got that injury that they're dealing with. One of their top guys, so you may want to look into that. I don't know what the status is as of last night. All I know is that
yeah, we'll have to look into that.
And it could be dicey.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that. Thank you for telling me that. I didn't see that they were dealing with an injury. I thought that they were pretty good to go. But all right, well, that being said, tonight, guys, we've got our final position preview, and we're combining both of them, starting pitcher and relief pitchers, just into our 2022 pitcher preview. And before we get going on to that, though, just want to remind everybody, hit that like button, the follow button, subscribe button. You know, give us those ratings. We greatly appreciate you all for that, and that goes a long way to helping us. So without further ado, let's bring on our guest first, and it's Michael Simeone of SP Streamer. What's going on, man?
Not much. Thanks for having me on here. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thanks for coming on. It's been a few years running. I think I reminded you before the show where we actually met originally. It was on PitchCon with Curlin and Matt Williams and you and me. And, man, there was somebody else there, and I totally blanked at who it was.
There definitely was. I was trying to think of who it was, too, but I couldn't remember.
Yeah, but that was a very funny hour.
anything with Mike Curlin is interesting. I'll put it that
He's going to be on in a couple weeks. So we'll have a good time with him. So, but all right, man. So before we jump into our pitcher preview here, let's do our beer of the week.
Beer.
All right, Michael, you are the guest, so you can go first.
Yeah, so I don't drink beer.
That's fine. Hey.
So I know, but people are always like shocked usually when I say that. So I drink bourbon. I brought some Basil Hayden's with me. okay. So you got some behind you. There you go. Is that Four things. Roses?
That is the limited edition barrel strength small batch. Got a regular small batch select behind it. I've got my Colonel E.H. Taylor's here, which are freaking impossible to find now. So thankfully I still have enough of those to bide my time. A couple good things over here.
Nice.
Good stuff. All right, AJ.
All right. I'm drinking, I guess, a new to me beer. It is one of the local places just has this big truck farm brewery. And it's just like all different types of trucks. So this is their dually, which is their double IPA, chock full of Chinook hops, 7.9%. So most of their other ones, I think, are hover around 6, maybe into the 7s. But I think I had one of these the other night. That was pretty good.
You think? Pick it up. Is that good of a night?
Yes, I did, and yes, it was.
All right, good stuff. All right, I believe, I don't know if you had this one last week and forgot to check it in, or if you just had another one from this brewery last week, but this is the Widowmaker Quarry Juice. Their four-pack, actually, is like four different colored cans.
Yeah, Widowmaker's phenomenal.
I don't think
I had that one.
So this one's an orange can. There's a like green, a purple, and a blue, I think, are the other can colors.
Yeah.
So, of course, Hokies got to bring out the orange for the show. This is the first time I've had this one. It is a 8% double IPA. Let's see how it is. Ooh, that is tasty.
Nice.
I'm gonna give that one a good 4.5, man. That is good. It's nice. Yeah. It's really juicy. Like, it's definitely not dry hopped. That is solid. That's gonna go down faster than it probably should.
Yeah, I don't know if I drank the one that I had from them last week.
But
now that I think
I do want to say I have a reserve on hand, and I saved this last one. I had it a couple weeks ago. I saved this very last one for this show specifically because I knew who our guest was, and it is the other half. Brewery, which is a New York brewery, and this is their anniversary edition of something. I don't know. They've got like multiple anniversary editions out right now, which is why I say that's kind of weird. But this is the fifth of whatever anniversary this is for them, and it is I Love New York.
Nice.
So I figured, Simeon, you are a New York boy.
Yes, I am.
I have this as my reserve beer for the night just for you.
Appreciate that.
So. So, all right, man, let's jump into the pitchers. And, I know a lot of things are changing rapidly with trades and things like that. But, we could go a whole show on just some of that stuff. But let's just dig into some of these things. And we are going to start with some of the super early news here. And that is, or recent news, sorry, with Chris Sale. Obviously, it was announced this morning that he has a stress fracture in his rib. And so he will not be able to throw. I've heard 3 months. I've heard 4 weeks. I don't think anybody really knows right now. But that being said, he was being drafted probably somewhere in the top 15, at least top 20 of most starting pitchers in most drafts. That's obviously going to drop. I guess first question is, are you comfortable drafting him at all? And then, what would that cost actually be for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a shame because he looked good coming back last year in terms of, like, when a pitcher comes back from Tommy John, you want to make sure they have their fastball command and velocity, and he did. So things looked up for him coming into the season. I think that's why he's being so drafted so high in drafts, because people had confidence in him. I wasn't touching him, so thankfully I have zero shares of him. And that's just because of the long track record of injuries. Obviously, great pitcher when on the mound. Now I'm definitely not touching him, obviously.
Yeah, don't say.
I don't know where he's going to drop to. Honestly, I don't even know. He would have to go very late for me to touch him. Like,
yeah.
I don't even know. I want to say, like, past, I don't know, pick 300 or something. It'd have to be something really late. I mean, it depends on format too. I mean, if you have an IL slot, then obviously he's more obtainable. But yeah, I mean, I'm just staying away. Too many things going wrong with him, as always.
I've definitely got him down there around, like, pitcher 90-ish right now, which is...
Right, yeah. I mean, I was going to say 70-ish.
You're digging it. Yeah, I mean, I could probably put him up above, like, Gonsolin, which I've got around 85, 86. But he's right there with, like, McCullers. Like, they're back-to-back right now for me. It's just kind of like...
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what to do with either one of these guys. Oh, the Turn 2 podcast actually just responded. John L. was the other guy on the panel. So there we go.
Moving averages, yeah.
Yeah, so there we go. Yeah, I totally forgot. So thank you for the reminder. I don't know. I thought there was a little bit of discount in the price, you know, for fear of re-injury already there. But you're right. He looked good, although some of the – I'd say his command wasn't quite where you would hope it would have been last year when he returned. I know he didn't go, like, super deep into a lot of games, so that was also a concern. Like, maybe they would just kind of play it safer with him type of thing, too. Mm-hmm. But, and of course, Fangraphs doesn't want to work right now. So let's.
Yeah, Fangraphs is down right now.
Nice. Let's do the other one. Baseball reference. Be my hero. All right. Yeah. Walks per nine were up at 2.3, which is basically his, you know, after his first couple of years, that was his career high. So, yeah, I mean, command wasn't where you loved it for him. But, you know, he was definitely coming around. And you were hoping, like, a whole offseason being healthy was going to help. But now not so much. So it's just at this point, it's starting to become too many injuries for him. And I'm pretty much off of him. Unfortunately, I've drafted him already in TGFBI along with Tatis. So that team's dead. That's cool. See you next year, guys.
Seriously.
Yeah, right?
All right. So the next question that I'm adding in here now, because I was told to add a question.
No, never mind.
Shut up.
we're just gonna throw one in on you because apparently
I'm throwing one in at you. So it's obviously the free agency season is underway here, and former Cy Young pitcher Mr. Zach Greinke has signed a 1-year deal with the Kansas City Royals, where he started his career and had some pretty good success. With Greinke, are you thinking that he's going to be able to find some of that early career mojo back in the baby blue, or is he just going to make his owners blue because he's not that good anymore?
So he's tough. I mean, I think a lot of pitchers who rely on command, which is Greinke, had issues last year because MLB kept changing the ball throughout the year. So it's kind of hard for them to really get a handle on the type of ball that they're throwing all the time. So I think that will probably help him. I mean, I don't know. I don't really like going for guys who are throwing sub 90 and they're at age 38, to be honest with you. But I think he can be that boring old guy, and maybe he could give you that, like, low 4 ERA, you know, with a decent whip, and that's just going to kind of be who he is moving forward. I don't think we're going to see – I would be surprised if we see, like, a sub 3 ERA coming from him. And I mean, it's not like he's playing for a good team either. So, like, the wins won't really be there. So he's just not going to be as valuable. But yeah, I mean, I think as long as they don't tamper with the ball, though, I think he's going to be okay and, you know, be closer to that like 4 ERA range instead of like a 4.15, 4.25 type of thing.
Yeah, I think the thing with me and Greinke is that when you get to that range of pitchers, I mean, you could go for him because maybe the ERA is a little bit safer, as Michael's saying, other than like, you know, like a Singer or something like that. But Singer's got so much more strikeout upside potential and more potential to like actually get below the 4 because of the strikeouts could help him get below there. To where Greinke's not, he doesn't have anything in his repertoire at this point to like help him really like break that threshold for me. So
yeah,
it's very likely I just pass on him, you know, just altogether, just try to take somebody with upside at that point in the draft. And then if I don't, you know, that upside guy doesn't hit at that point in the draft, you're probably just going to drop and pick up the next, you know, free agent guy anyway. So who cares? Greinke's just sort of boring and not really worth it at that point.
Yeah, I will say that the old man, Mr. Jamie Moyer, did win a World Series in 2008 with Philadelphia Phillies while throwing probably like 60.
Like 60. So nice.
It is possible. There is hope.
It doesn't mean he had value in fantasy. It just means he could help himself with a team.
Every third or fourth game, he might have gotten you a quality start.
Sure. We'll go with that. And you will say this about those guys. Because they can't strike out, they might have to pitch to contact more. So they can go deep into games. So, like, if they can you know, runs off the table, quality starts, like, yeah, there you go. Right. But this is that's a dangerous road to play, I feel like.
Yeah.
All right, next actual question that you knew was coming, Michael. Robbie Ray, you know, obviously incredible last year, posting career best numbers across the board on his way to the Cy Young. Yeah, that he was in Toronto last year. You know, the thing that really stands out to me when I kind of dug a little more into him this season was the fact that his whip and his walk percentage decreased tremendously. And obviously they both go hand in hand, which is why they both dropped at the same time. You know, but like any sort of hope that that's actually repeatable?
Yeah. He's tough to figure out moving forward, in my opinion. And he's someone that I've kind of just have a bad feeling about, but I can't really explain why. Obviously, yeah, he cut that walk rate down by a crazy amount. And that was the big thing for him, right? I mean, that's been his issue forever, was too many walks. Always had the strikeouts. It was always the walks were the issue. And basically what he did was he took his four-seam fastball and just threw it down the middle every time to make sure he wasn't going to walk anyone, you know, because the slider's ridiculously good. Mm-hmm. So I think my worry with him is I think the walk rate can definitely stick, but I don't know how long he can last just throwing his four-seam down the middle and not getting into trouble. Like, if I'm a hitter now, I'm just laying off that slider and waiting for the four seam to get into the zone and just swinging at it. Everyone knows what he's doing at this point, so I just don't know how long that's going to last, and I guess that's why I'm a little afraid of him. But again, I think it's, you know, it's a good thing that his walk rate is down. Clearly he was able to do it for an entire year, so maybe he can continue to do it, and he still has that really, really good slider. So I think he's going to be good. That strikeout rate's always going to be there. I just don't know if he's going to be as good as his ADP is saying he will be, you know.
Yeah, Ray's interesting for me. I mean, he's always been pretty reliable with K's, but his ERA was never where it was last year. I mean, it just seems like too much of an outlier for me to really be able to jump on board with a full-on repeat. I do think that going out to Seattle will help his cause a little. Weaker division, especially now that the A's are getting rid of everybody on their team that hits the ball. So You know, those are good stats for him. But I mean, I don't see the repeat. I think he can still be a valuable fantasy asset. I'm just not paying up to get him where he's going right now. Mm-hmm. So
can you guys still hear me by any chance?
Yes,
I can hear you.
It's weird.
Your picture is frozen.
Yeah, I'm completely, my computer just completely, like, everything's blank, but I can still hear everything. So
mine's been kind of wacky today too.
Way to join the voice in the clouds, Joe.
Yeah. I mean, the face that you have is pretty sweet. Mike, can we get a screenshot of that? Can we get a save of that?
Oh, my God. No, please not. Anyway.
Okay, I will do it.
Yeah, I might have to bounce. I'm going to bounce for a minute. But let's move on to the next question, AJ. I will be right back.
So speaking of Robbie Ray and coming out of the AL East, going back to the AL East is Mr. Kevin Gausman. And, you know, they basically flip-flopped here in going West Coast, East Coast. Mm-hmm. You know, and Gausman pitched out of his mind last year. I mean, he was so, so good. But he has not been that good in the AL East. I mean, he was with the Orioles. They're not a team, you know, similar to Kansas City. They're a team that's not going to be high in the win column, not going to have a ton of run support, even though Camden Yards is still a you know, hitter's park. They adjusted the fences in, I believe, left field a little bit. So either way, it's ball's still going to fly out of there once it gets warm enough. Now that Gausman is on a better team, obviously that helps his cause. But does him moving back into this division in general concern you?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a tougher competition than compared to when he was on the Giants, I think. I mean, in my opinion, the AL East is just the best division. I mean, if you look at, you know, their offenses last season, I think they had like two or three of those teams were top five, maybe in top 10 in the league. So, yeah, I mean, he's going to get a lot of wins, which is good. But I think here's the thing with Gausman is I didn't like him last year either, coming into last year. I mean, he played very well, but he just relies on that splitter, which can be erratic, and it hasn't happened with him. So I guess it might be kind of not smart of me to think that's going to happen all of a sudden, but it still worries me. And I think if that splitter goes, then Gausman goes, and it's just very tough division. You know, and like I said, those offenses in that division are really good. So he definitely worries me, and he's someone that I am staying away from as well, kind of like Ray.
Yeah.
So I'm back.
All right. Welcome.
Thankfully, I have a fast computer and it reboots really quickly. yeah. So, Gausman, obviously. Yeah, I caught the trail end of what you said, and I totally agree. Him playing in the new division, I mean, I like the stuff he's got, but it obviously is going to – his stats are going to take a nosedive this year. Maybe not so much to the point where, you know, when at its Orioles days, but I think we will see a decrease in production from him for sure. And – you know, I think that's honestly, I think it's being reflected a little bit in the cost. He's still being drafted pretty high, but I mean, he was arguably at least a top 10 pitcher last year for fantasy. He's down in like, you know, the 16 to 20 range, I think, wherever you look. So I think that's pretty fair. You know, could he drop into like the high to mid 20s when all said and done? Sure, but I don't think you're severely overpaying for Kevin Gausman, despite him being in a harder division. And you got to remember, like, I mean, you know, yeah, you know, the Red Sox and the Yankees, like, yeah, I mean, they're lineups are loaded, but I mean, the Yankees get injured a lot. So who knows what happens there. Sometimes he could get lucky and face them a few times when they're not at full strength, and you could really pay off for him. So, next question we got here, a pair of San Diego Padres, both guys that have been dealing with injuries off and on, Clevinger and Blake Snell, both at least used to be very reliable and productive. But, injuries and things like that have caused them to either be not reliable, not available. And then also when they've been on the field, just a little underwhelming. Snell came back last year, right, and just wasn't quite what we all were hoping for. Until like the very end, he started coming around. Clevinger obviously missed the whole season. What do you take with these guys? Like, in how comfortable are you drafting them? Given, the upside's pretty massive with them, but it is a risk taking them.
Yeah. So I like Snell more than Clevinger. I think Snell, kind of like you said, he pitched a lot better towards the end of last year, and that was because he went to his curveball more. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if that sticks. I think it will, because that's kind of what made him really good in Tampa. So clearly the results followed, and he was able to go deep into games too, finally. So I think he's going to continue to do that. I think he's going late enough where you could take that risk. As far as Clevinger, I really struggle to take him at all, because again, another pitcher is really good when he's on the mound, but I'm pretty risk adverse, and he is so injury prone. He's had one season with 200 innings, but besides that, the most he's pitched was 126. So he's not really going to get you a lot of innings. And it's likely because people have always said is his delivery. It's very harsh on his body, the way he does it, the way he jerks. And it could continue to, create injuries for him moving forward. So I think Clevinger is just really, really risky right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got Clevinger in like around the 50 range for starting pitchers, but he's always a guy I kind of look at him. I'm like, I don't know. It could be tough. Apparently, we just lost AJ. No, just kidding. I knew he was leaving. It's tough because you get to that point in the draft, right? And you look at guys and you're like, Clevinger, a little bit of upside. Or Stroman, who's safe, fine, you get guys like John Means, who not going to get you a lot of Ks, but pretty safe ratios. I don't know. The upside with Clevinger is sort of sometimes I think it depends on how I built my team above him, if I want to take that risk. But so sometimes I have once. Other times I haven't. I did take Clevinger once, but I have not taken him. Very often.
Yeah, for me, I'm probably staying away from both of these guys. The injuries obviously don't help their cause, but I'm more concerned with their performances. Snell hasn't really done much of anything since he won the Cy Young. Clevinger's been good, around that same time, and then injuries just really took over for him, and I just don't think he's ever been able to get all the way back. Maybe the longer layoff helps him, maybe it hurts both of these guys more. That's one of the big things we've talked about here with the lockout is looking back at the COVID season, the asterisk season of 2020 with the 60 games, and whether it was players just didn't care or they just didn't want to play, they were worried about health concerns and this and that, but there was a number of injuries and just other stuff going on, besides just the COVID, not enough training, not enough off-season preparation, and we probably will see some of that again this year. Even though they're going to play the full 162,
Absolutely.
30 doubleheaders now are added to the schedule, I believe it said. So, you know, and now they're, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe they're back to 9-inning doubleheaders. So,
yeah, I think so.
I mean, that's going to wear on the players a little bit more. I don't know why they would push for that instead of the 7. But I mean, you know, whatever. So I'm not really on board with these guys though. So speaking of performance, we had an amazing performance out of Mr. Ranger Suarez last year in 2021. A 1.36 ERA, a 1.00 whip, cool whip, 107 Ks and 106 innings. So, I mean, it's pretty obvious that I don't think anybody out there is really looking for this same performance to be replicated this year. But, you know, what do you think we can realistically expect from Suarez this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to tell because, you know, half of his appearances last year were in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a small sample with just 12 starts. But yeah, I mean, he's tough. He kind of reminds me of Kyle Hendricks type, you know, relies on fastballs, but really more so on his placement. He does have a really good changeup that gets a lot of whiffs. But more of that weak contact guy, relying on a lot of ground balls. And obviously, like you said, no one thinks he's going to be a sub-2 ERA guy.
Yeah.
But I think it's possible that he gets you like a mid to high 3 ERA. Low strikeout rate, but he's going to be that guy where if you kind of have a bit of a risky rotation coming into towards the end of the draft, I feel like he's a good high floor guy that you could take to just kind of try and balance out your ratios. Because he just induces a lot of weak contact. Like he's like number one in a lot of metrics for weak contact.
Yeah.
So I think he's pretty safe in terms of ERA and whip too. And I think he's just going to, you know, I think he'll perform and get you like a 3.5 to 3.7 ERA, which is perfectly fine.
Yeah, it's interesting to see a guy who can induce so many ground balls and so much weak contact like that, but also get you, you know, near 9 strikeouts per 9. That I feel like you don't see that as often. You know, they might be in like the high 7s, the low 8s, you know, the mid 8s.
Mm-hmm.
It's still okay, but you know, you don't get guys with a, you know, 2.29 ground ball to fly ball ratio, or you know, a 25 to, you know, 20-20, whatever if you want to call it. You know, he was 35% or no, sorry, he was a 59%. I was looking at fly ball. That didn't make any sense. My numbers, ground ball rate last year, almost 60%. I mean, like it's insane.
Crazy.
And then, you know, he still was able to put up, you know, respectable strikeout numbers that, you know, you can get his ADP right now. And I had it written
low.
Yeah. I mean, it is pretty low. I had all this up, but sorry, my computer restarted. So I got to look it up real quick if anybody else has it up. But over the last, Mr. I just left to go change browser.
And I was right back.
What is
that?
Because
I was trying to use a different browser and it was freezing early. And I was like, I'm just going to go ahead and switch.
Excuses. Yeah, but his ADP is around 184 for the month of March on NFBC. So. With a low of 133 and a high of 264. Wow.
Wow.
That's pretty crazy. So yeah, I mean, 184, you know, that's pretty solid. So, I mean, he's not going to cost you a lot. I mean, at that point, the risk seems worth the gamble, right? I mean, again, he's in there around that, like, Stroman, those other pitchers around him, you know, Stroman, Clevinger. It's funny. Obviously, Bauer's not getting drafted anymore. Yeah. Wainwright, Scooble, Taylor Rogers. I mean, some decent pitchers, but I mean, his upside could be way better than theirs, in my opinion. Wainwright's like the super safe guy. He just not going to strike out a whole lot anymore. So I mean, it's at that point in the draft, again, I said it before, it's kind of like what do you need? You know, that's where you have to figure out if you could take the risk of a Ranger Suarez.
Adam Wainwright is baseball's version of Aaron Rodgers. A, they look alike, and B, neither one of them will go the hell away. So I do like Wainwright, but I mean, he's just not the same guy he was, I guess. I don't know, but I mean, he had a pretty good year last year, so maybe he is. Maybe he'll prove some people wrong this year.
Do they look alike? I mean, Wainwright doesn't have long hair, but
well, yeah, take the long hair out of it.
I'm trying to like picture it. I Google image them real quick. Just got to figure this one out. I think that's going to bug me.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Bearded, goofy looking white dudes.
Let's be honest. The guy that really won't go away is Tom
Are you
Brady.
Talking about yourself, AJ? Jeez. and all of us? Like,
yes.
That's like 90% of fantasy baseball Twitter. Sorry, guys. And we just lost all our viewers. All right, let's move on here. This team in general, I have a very tough time drafting a lot of their pitchers, and it is the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, they play the games with their pitchers, right? They got short leashes. They've got they always seem to have a great bullpen, so they can. They do the starter mentality thing. Yeah, they've got some great talent. You know, Shane McClanahan, that's Shane Baz. McClanahan, they got Baz. It is Shane McClanahan. Are they both Shane?
Two Shanes. Two Shanes.
It is Shane. Yeah. I should have just said the Shanes. anyway. Yeah, the Shanes. They've got them, right? They are both phenomenal talents, and I don't think anybody's denying that. But it's do you want to spend the draft capital on them in fantasy drafts knowing that their innings are probably going to get limited in some way with this team?
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough, honestly, because they're both so good. I really like both of them. I really like McClanahan especially. And I mean, a quality start league, you can't touch them, obviously. But they will still get you a good amount of wins because they have that really solid bullpen, obviously. And the Rays typically win a ton of games. It's tough. I think you have to draft around them. I'll put it that way. I think like if you take a McClanahan, you really need to have a couple good aces, or you got to take guys after him that are going to get you a ton of innings. So I think because their skill levels are so good and that they could give you such good ratios, I think they're worth building around. Baz might be a little too expensive for me just because we really don't know yet if he's even going to start with the team. Yeah. So you have no idea what kind of innings he's going to get. But McClanahan, I think, is still worth it. You just got to know how to build around him. And, you know, I think we could see more innings from him than we expect because I think they're going to really need him.
Yeah, I mean, he's up to their ace. So, they're going to have to lean on him. So, I mean, they can't just rely on the bullpen every single game. The bullpen will get worn down for sure. So, yeah, I can see that happening. It's still tough with the Rays to, like, trust it.
Yeah, I know.
Well, yeah.
The thing that I like here is Kluber. I mean, I know he's older. He's had his fair share of down, you know, performances over the past handful of years. But I don't think he could have fallen in a better place than Tampa Bay because of how they use their starters and you know, manage innings and everything like that. They're going to have more bullpen days than anybody else, you know, anybody else in the NBA or NBA, sorry, MLB. But I think this is a great spot for Kluber, and you know, I don't think he's going to be the Kluber of old, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him have some value, you know, this year. So it's kind of my thoughts on Tampa.
He'll get streamed in a lot of, you know,
yeah,
transactional leagues for sure. That is for sure.
Yeah, so. I think so. I mean, I think he could be the one where they use him as a starter and then eventually just kind of keep letting him go out there. until, you know, he injures himself again. So,
and now he's well, out now it has been done because AJ's put the kibosh on him.
It shall pass. So all right. So just in general, you know, I talking about Kluber is kind of a later round guy that I like. Who are some of the other later round guys that you like in targeting?
Yeah, I picked three guys. I really like Jordan Montgomery for the Yankees. I just think he has two really, really good breaking balls. Both had a swing strike percentage over 20%. Fastball's the issue, but I feel like he could work around it and maybe they could fix that. Plus, again, on a good team, tough division, sure, but he was able to handle it last season, so I don't see why he couldn't do it again. My second guy is Sonny Gray. I was actually all over him until even before he got traded. Now he's probably going to rise in ADP because he goes to a better ballpark, mm-hmm. better division, yeah. better defense behind him, much better defense behind him.
Yeah.
And he's a ground ball pitcher. So I feel like that landing spot was perfect for him. And he's like one of few pitchers going in that range that could give you a 30% strikeout rate. So I think he was kind of forgotten. Now he's definitely on everyone's radar again. Mm-hmm. But luckily I was able to draft him a couple times before that happened. And then my last guy is Alex Cobb. He's going to the Giants, who we all know have been pitching whispers as of late. He's somewhat similar to Gausman. Loves to throw a splitter. His splitter is really good, and I think if he could throw it more like the Giants did with Gausman, he could find a lot of success. The only downfall with him is health. He's a little bit of an injury risk, but I think he has a lot of talent there, and he could get a high strikeout rate, good ballpark he's pitching into now. So I think Cobb is definitely worth a look later on in drafts.
All right. So can I ask you about a couple other guys, you know, maybe even mm-hmm. I'm going a little bit later in drafts just to ask you. I'm interested in your thoughts on Casey Mize.
So he's a little tough because you're not going to get strikeouts from him. I think he had really good command last year. Yes. And he's more deceiving than anything. I do like him though. I think he's got a good base level there. I think the only problem with him and why he's going late is I don't think there's a lot of upside there. I think he's just going to be a high 3 to low 4 ERA pitcher. Not a lot of strikeouts, but is serviceable. They did limit him last year, so hopefully they kind of, you know, let him throw more innings this year. But I do kind of like what Detroit's doing. I think they've been pretty good at developing pitchers as of late, and I think they have a lot of talent. I think they're all still maybe another year away, but time will tell with that.
All right. Got two more. Chris Flexen.
Yeah, kind of like Mize. More of a command type of guy. You know what you're going to get. You know, he'll get wins with Seattle. Really good ballpark for pitchers. I think he'll be serviceable. But again, kind of like streamer level just because lack of Ks and not a lot of upside as well.
All right. And then this one, I don't think lack of Ks is the problem. And it's, and I might butcher the name, but Eliezer Hernandez, Miami.
Yeah.
And he had a great 2020. Granted, very short sample size, 6 games, 26. But, I mean, 3.16 ERA, basically a 1 whip. And then last year kind of, you know, injury sort of went in the wrong direction. But, I mean, he's had success, and he is buried in ADP.
Yeah, and on another team that knows how to develop pitchers, right? Mm-hmm. His slider is so good, and I actually talked about him on a recent podcast, and I was telling people, like, if you haven't watched him throw a slider, just go find some videos of him throwing a slider because it's so beautiful looking. I want to say it looks as good as like almost Chris Sale's, like, you know, just really, really good vertical movement. I mean, a horizontal movement on it. But the problem is the fastball with him. I don't know. I feel like the Marlins can maybe figure something out where he changes his pitch mix and maybe they'll help him. So I think it's really a sequencing thing with him because he needs to tone that fastball down. I think throw the slider more maybe. And then I think he also throws a changeup, going off the top of my head there. And maybe throw that a little more too. So we'll see. I think he has a lot of potential too. It's just a matter of them putting it together.
Yeah, he's been a guy who, and of course, on NFBC, you know, the drafts were like 30 to 40 rounds. So, you know, last couple of rounds, I'm like, yep, I'm just going to take a chance on him. Because he seems like a guy who could really put it together. If, you know, I know the fastball isn't there. I do know that. But I think he is a guy who gets just overlooked easily for some reason. And, you know, in that range, I mean, there's not a whole lot of guys that I feel like could do what he it could do.
Right.
So, all right, man, let's jump into some relievers. You know, we'll just call it the closers, I guess, because that's what people mostly look at here. But let's just start off here with a strategy question. So, obviously, I have noticed this season, especially with TGFBI and some of the NFBC stuff that I have gotten involved with, closers are flying off the boards earlier than I have ever seen. I mean, we're seeing Josh Hader, Liam Hendricks go in the first, second rounds. I mean, I've just never seen this before. Are you in on that strategy, or are you still I'm going to figure it out later and possibly even just hit the waiver wire type of guy?
So, I mean, I have a couple of thoughts on that. So, A lot of ADP early on was draft and hold leagues, which is you draft 50 players, there's no waiver wire, right? And we were in a lockout. So we had no idea. There was like only a handful of relief pitchers that you knew for a fact were going to be closing. So that's why they were going so early. And I only have like one Hendrick share, so I wasn't really jumping into that high of a level. I was more so getting like an Edwin Diaz. So still early, but not like second round early. Now that the lockout is over and now more fab leagues are coming in, and we should start finding out about more closers. I won't be jumping that high. I won't be taking lead pitchers that early. Okay. I'll probably be more so going to like that second tier. But I will say I understand it just because a lot of people don't want to spend fab money trying to find these relievers. So they'd rather just pay up for it. So I think it is kind of like, how your imagining style is. So I'll probably go like a second tier reliever and then like wait towards the end and kind of like take some spec ads and work the waiver wire personally.
Yeah, that's typically how I've done it. In TGFBI this year, which is the primary NFBC league I'm in, with Fab, I did grab Hendricks with the third. My thought process there was I was definitely going to wait like an extra few rounds than I usually do. And when everybody else is trying to load up on those middle tier relievers, I went and grabbed a bunch of bats and good pitching. But for me, Corey Knebel, he fell, and I was able to grab him as my second closer. So I feel really good about my closing situation in that league. Yeah. Not so much my first pick or my Chris Sale pick. Thanks, injuries. But hopefully Tatis can heal faster than he can Sale. But I'm not feeling good about that. You know, dude, I was this close to taking J-Ram with the second pick. And I literally was like, dude, it's Tatis. How do I not do it? Click.
Yep. He has to stop riding motorcycles.
Yeah. I mean, so now my shortstop is, I don't even know.
You got to pick
one up. Gio Urshela? No, I do. Wow. I Gio Urshela, I think.
Urshela. Yeah, well,
he's not horrible, but definitely not great. I mean, I was relying on, you know, what, hopefully 30 stolen bases from Tatis, so that's going to hurt. I'm not going to make that up anytime soon. So I'll have to figure that one out. But I mean, I'm usually with you on the saves. I kind of want at least one
reliable guy. I mean, closers really aren't reliable at all, but you overpay, especially this year, for some of the top guys. And I mean, I know that early on, and that was a crazy thing. I knew that like the early ADP was for those draft and holds leagues. But you went into like TGFBI, and it's like everybody was just using that ADP. TGFBI uses FAB, and people were still drafting them in the first round or second round. There was at least one team I know that took on the like near the turn, and the back end of the first round, took both Hader and Hendricks in TGFBI. I'm like, that is,
yeah,
I mean, that feels like a little too much to me. So I don't know. I mean, I get it, because it is tough to have to chase saves and you blow so much FAB on it. So maybe, you know, at least grabbing one guy that you feel really confident about isn't such a bad idea. Just I wouldn't go overboard with it. So yeah. Sounds like you agree.
Definitely.
Yeah. So going back to the Blue Jays here, Mr. Jordan Romano, it was good last year, but there's been chatter that Toronto might go out and get another reliever who has some closing experience. Because of that, are you avoiding Romano or dropping him down? What are you doing with him?
Yeah, I mean, Romano took a nice step forward in recent years because he increased his velocity. He made a little bit of a pitch mix change. So I fully believe in the skill set that he brings to the table. But yeah, there's been so much speculation that they're going to bring someone in, whether it be like a Kimbrel or who we might talk about next, Kenley Jansen, you know, try and chase after someone like that. And it's still a possibility. So I personally have zero shares of him, and it's really just because of that reason, because you still don't know, and we really won't know until basically those closers sign somewhere. Or, well, I mean, if it's Kimbrel, he would be traded, but yeah.
I'm right there with you. Like I've almost pulled the trigger on him a couple different times, and I just can't do it because of that exact reason. Like, he feels like it's you know, kind of like Barlow, right? Like, for Kansas City, like, he's got good talent, but he is much cheaper. And you know, the fear with a team like that, right, is that in the mid-season, they just get rid of their guy. At this point, like, Toronto's a good team. Yeah. They could bring in somebody super early, and Romano still could lose his job, but you've paid a far higher price for it. And so that's why I can't do it. There's other guys who I feel like around him, or even going after him, right? You feel safer that the job is there. Maybe not the skill set is great, but at least the job is there for him. And you know, with your closers, especially in saves only leagues, you have to go for that. You know, that will tilt their pick in their favor, for me at least. So, you alluded to our next question here, and it's Kenley Jansen. You know, he still doesn't have a home. You know, Kenley Jansen has been a guy.
Just go to your home.
You know, Kenley Jansen, like, he's been a guy who, you know, a couple of years ago, right, everybody was like, oh man, is he washed, blah blah blah, like, he's starting to lose it. And yeah, he wasn't pitching, you know mid one ERAs anymore, but you know, he's still doing all right. He had a few, it was some of those like random blow-up games, and his walks has increased dramatically. He's getting in some scary situations. I mean, look, the Dodgers still have not re-signed him. So maybe that's a great sign for I'm blanking on his name right now.
Trinan.
Yeah, thank you. But what do you do with Jansen? Because his ADP is still kind of around the Romano range.
It's getting tough right now. I have a few of him, so I'm getting a little worried at this point. I do believe wherever he signs, I hope he signs somewhere. he will be the closer, because that's all he wants to do. That's all he's going to do. I mean, he's going to be a closer wherever he goes. It doesn't matter where. I think he'll perform fine, and I think he'll get you a ton of saves. So I think he's pretty safe. It's just a matter of, will he actually sign somewhere? The longer it goes on without him signing, I don't know what that really means. I don't know if that I don't know if maybe he's just more likely to just end up with the Dodgers again. I don't know. I just hope he signs soon, honestly. if I'm drafting today, though, I don't think I could take him, just out of that fear that he just for some reason doesn't sign and like a month goes by and then maybe eventually he does or something.
Yeah. I mean, he's been very, very solid throughout his career, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like the past few years, he's just fallen off. And like Joe, like you alluded to, he just gets in these situations where you're worried. You know, he's just not locking it down as much as he used to. I mean, he still had a 2.22 ERA last year. You know, 30.9% K rate, but he had a 12.9, you know, walk rate to go with it. So it's just, he just worries me, and I haven't, you know, had him on a roster in at least 3 or 4 years, I think. And it's just 'cause everybody else goes and gets him before I really want to, but, the past few years I've been okay with it, like, just because he'll still get numbers and get you some saves and whatnot, but if he goes somewhere other than the Dodgers, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see where he lands, to see you know, how he's gonna perform, and if he goes, I don't see him going somewhere where he wouldn't be the closer. I just find that kind of hard to swallow, but I mean, he may go somewhere where there is competition. So he might have a shorter leash, but looking at short leashes in general, let's just go through a couple quick rapid fire predictions for some teams with potential closer committees here. So we've got Detroit with Soto and Fulmer. We've got Boston with Barnes, Brazier, Whitlock. We've got Philly, who we've already talked about a little bit, with Knebel, Alvarado, and then as of the last few days, Brad Hand, and now Yuri's Familia. So that's just a mess in general. Cincy with Sims and Sessa, and San Fran with Doval, McGee, and Rogers.
Maybe
let's just take it one team at a time. Yeah, so yeah. Like Detroit.
I just wanted to list them all out.
Yeah,
and
I mean, Detroit's tough. Soto, obviously electric stuff. You know, he has so much talent, but the walk rate is atrocious. So everyone's just wondering, is he going to fix it? Can he fix it? Fulmer has been really good when it's come to being in the pen. It's a tough one. I tell you what, if I have a Soto share, if I grab Soto in a league, I'm definitely grabbing Fulmer, no doubt.
Yeah.
And I feel like it'd go either way, honestly. If Soto doesn't fix those walks, Fulmer's going to get a ton of save opportunities. But if Soto does come in and limits those walks, he could be like one of the best relievers in the league, in my opinion. So it's tough. This is like, honestly, the hardest one for me. And, but I mean, I don't know. I guess Soto's like the more sexy pick, whereas Fulmer's a more boring pick. So I guess it kind of depends what you want to go for.
Do you have either one of them yet? Have you?
I do. I have. I think I have two of Soto in both those leagues. I also grabbed Fulmer.
Okay.
Just to make sure.
Are those like NFBC draft and hold, or like what?
Yeah, those are draft and holds. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, of the two, I'm a little more partial to Fulmer. But yeah, I think he was, you know, brilliant as a starter until he got injured, and then he just never caught fire again until he went to the bullpen. So
Michael, I guess just for sake of, you know, the typical viewing audience, what would you do with these, you know, these teams, like when you get to each one, and we'll start with Detroit, obviously, you know, who are you, or if you are even trying to target any of these guys in like a standard 12 teamer or even like a standard 15 teamer with, you know, normal waivers type of deal. So
yeah, like who would I take? I mean,
like Detroit, like would you like, would you just be like, meh, I'm not gonna worry about either about one of these guys, or would you actually take a shot on one of these guys?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a sucker for upside, so I would totally take a shot on Soto.
Okay, now next one is Boston. So obviously Barnes, I think things are going to change now in Boston. You know, there was probably a whole bunch of guys in the mix, but maybe one less now with the Sale injury. But Barnes, Brassier, Whitlock, you know, there was talk that Hoke was possibly, but there's now a lot of talk he's going to be the fifth starter. But we still got those three sitting there. You know, Barnes was really good last year, an all-star, and then just kind of the wheels fell off. And, you know, we've seen that before with him too. So I think Barnes has the inside track. Is that what you would think, or and how much confidence do you have there with it?
Yeah, I think Barnes, I think it's going to be like last year. I think Barnes is going to start as the relief pitcher and probably get you a couple of saves, and then he's going to blow it. And then I think he'll go to Whitlock. And if I were to draft anyone here, it'd be Whitlock personally.
All right. Just another added Sandler. You blew it.
Yeah. So then going into Philly here, like I said, originally when we wrote this, or when Joe wrote this agenda together, it was just Knebel and Alvarado. Now we've got Brad Hand and Familia.
I'm not happy. As you know, my TGFBI curse, it's always going to blow up in my face.
I mean, I'm, as a Philly fan, I'm kind of happy to see like names in the bullpen as opposed to just, you know, Amoroso bread factory guys. But
all right, Eagles fan.
Hand hasn't really been great over the past few years. Familia's had, you know, off the field issues and whatnot. I'm actually kind of surprised that they brought him in. But I guess, you know, misery loves company with Odubel Herrera. So I don't know. I mean, this is just a ridiculous bullpen now. I mean, you got to think Knebel's got the inside track.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, it's not going to be Familia. I know as a Mets fan.
Yeah.
I think it'll be Knebel. This is a tough one too. I feel like if he does struggle, Hand has more of a track record, so they might end up going to him if he does struggle. I think Knebel's the one to own. I think you definitely need to handcuff him with Hand. I think Alvarado could maybe get a couple steals. I mean, steals, saves here and there, but
yeah,
he's not really worth to own. I am not touching this situation personally. I would not draft any of them.
Well, when it was just Knebel and Alvarado, I was way more confident.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, there was still speculation they were going to add someone, and like basically there's speculation that this would happen and it could happen. And obviously,
I felt like they paid this dude $10 million, like go close games for us, right? But
yeah.
That was my thinking, but maybe not. I don't know.
Lefty, Alvarado's... So maybe they play matchups too. I don't know.
I could see that.
It's hard to play matchup now though, because you got the three batter rule, right? That's still in play. So you're stuck with them, right? Or did they get rid of that?
Well, I mean, it could be.
I mean, they could try to figure it out, but yeah. I think that hurts him more than it helps him. So possibly, I don't know. I'm not happy.
Yeah.
Anyway, right. Next one here, we got Cincinnati, and you know, we got Sims and Sesa. There's other guys in the mix. I just wrote down two names, but this one feels like a complete mess. I think Sims has a slight inside track, but what's your thoughts?
What? Something happened to Sims, right?
Did it?
I could be wrong. Oh no, he said he's all clear regarding any potential arm troubles. I think he had something pop up. But anyway, I always liked Sims, but I think they've come out, and again, this could be totally wrong. I should have looked this up before coming on. I think they've come out saying that they want to toy with a lot of guys. I don't. Maybe wait. Now I'm trying to think. Maybe it's the opposite. Maybe they said they want one guy. I don't remember. But they worry me because last year they didn't have a clear closer. Sims did grab it at one point, but then gave it away because he didn't pitch well. So it's not like you have a good track record with him. I think the sneaky one here actually could be Art Warren. Okay. I think he might be able to grab some save opportunities. He pitched extremely well last season, has a really high K percentage. He had a 41 strikeout rate last year. So I think
that's nice.
I don't know if they want to leave him high leverage though. So he might stay in the seventh or eighth inning, but I think he could be sneaky where, you know, if Sims gets the opportunity and just can't do it, and same as Sessa, then I think Art Warren will step right in there and take the job easily.
Yeah, that's a situation I want nothing to do with. This is
I wouldn't touch it. I'm not touching it at all.
Yeah. And then last one, AJ.
It's San Fran. We got Duvall, McGee, and Rogers.
Yeah. This I would touch. I'm pretty confident, in my opinion. I think they're going to start off with McGee as the closer, and he's going to get you, I don't know, I guess I want to say like 8 to 10 saves. And then they're going to bring in Duvall to really finish out the rest of the year and be in that closer role because he's so good. So I think Duvall has been falling in ADP. So I think I would grab him, and I would also grab McGee too. I'd be willing to grab him just to kind of use him for the beginning of the year. And then just kind of when he gives up that job or whatever, just throw him back on the wire and then try and get someone else.
Yeah,
that's so hard to do in most leagues though. Like to
take,
to take a reliever that might not do anything for you for the first month maybe, right? You know, it's like that's tough. So, but I get it. And Duvall's a guy who could ratios and I believe he's got a good K percentage. Yeah, I mean 37-27 last season. So, he's not going to hurt you. You're just going to have to sit and maybe wait on him for a little while. And if you drop him, he's going to go for high. So good luck.
Yeah.
Last question here before we close out is, so save and holds leagues are becoming more and more popular. So how does that change your strategy, as we kind of alluded to earlier, is going after saves guys early? Do you still go after those? Maybe not the Hader and the Hendricks as early as they are going still in those leagues. But maybe you still go after some of those safer save guys, knowing that generally the save guys get you the higher count total in that category than a holds guy would. Right. Or do you just sit back and wait and just kind of take the scraps and figure it out all year, especially in like a normal daily, weekly or daily transactional league?
Yeah, saves holds. I think closers completely lose their value. And I 100% would not be going after proven closers. I would just wait, and I'd be taking a lot of high strikeout holds guys personally.
Okay. And then so – yeah, I'm generally the same way. Like if a really good closer falls to me, sometimes I'm just gonna be like, okay, I'll just take it. But generally, that doesn't happen. So yeah, I'm with you. I just kind of wait and take some of these, especially these holds guys, man. Some of them are better than the closers. You know, we see better strikeout rates, better whips, better and.
It's like Hader before he was the closer.
They were phenomenal.
Ridiculously good, and they were 7-8th inning.
Right, and so I was going to ask you, who are some of your targets? And the obvious one, and on the same team as Hader, is David Williams. So I think we'll pass on him because I think he is the dead obvious choice. He's top of the list for everybody. Nope. But what who are some other holds guys that you like a lot?
I think Tyler Rogers has to be one of them from the Giants. He can get you some saves too, but he mainly is their holds guy and obviously really good team. So I think he'll get a lot of opportunities. Another one is the White Sox, Aaron Bummer. I feel like people loved him. I think it was 2 years ago. Some people even thought maybe he'd eventually become their closer before Hendricks came over there. But really good skill set. Again, their holds guys too. And then one more guy I want to go with is Paul Sewell for the Mariners. Yes. I actually think he could potentially get some saves, but I think he's got a great skill set too. You know, good strikeout rate, going to be their basically high leverage guy for the entire year, honestly.
My boy, Dap Scout, JP, we shared the team on the Fantasy Six Pack series that because we ran out of spots, so we had to combine a couple of us. He definitely called out Paul Sewell pretty early for me, and I was like, all right, let's do it. And one other guy I want to ask you about, and a guy that we were kind of toying around drafting, Genesis Cabrera, St. Louis. What do you think about him? He had a good finisher last season, for sure.
Yeah, I honestly don't know that much about him.
I literally didn't. I know nothing about him, and he's just the guy that he kept bringing up. He's a big save holds guy. Dap Scout is, and so he kept bringing him up, and I was like, I feel like he's not going to get drafted, and he didn't.
He's not on draft boards.
I mean, I don't see like.
Super deep leagues.
He's not going to get you a ton of strikeouts.
He's like a nine.
I guess
like a pretty average guy for a reliever.
I mean, he's like 26% strikeout rate I'm looking at right now, which for a reliever is, I mean, it's good. It's not bad.
I mean, he had 28 holds last year.
But yeah, that was the thing. So it was he was using a lot of high leverage situations.
Yeah. I mean, you look at St. Louis, though, and they have
a ton of guys.
Jordan Hicks, who's probably going to end up in the starting rotation. Maybe. You don't know.
Probably, maybe.
I mean, that's the thing. Like,
sorry. Yeah, I mean, same with Alex Reyes every year, right?
They just recycle their guys. Yeah. And, you know, Carlos Martinez, perfect example. Like, oh, well, he's a starter. Oh, well, he got injured. Okay, well, we're going to make him a reliever. Oh, well, maybe we'll be a closer. Yeah. They just move guys around so much that it's hard to have much faith in where they're going to stick. But I do like Cabrera's upside. I think he's somebody that can be valuable from a fantasy standpoint if he starts getting those holds and gets put in those higher leverage situations. And if he ends up being like the eighth, late seventh or eighth inning guy, he's rosterable in my opinion.
I mean, and that's what he ended up being last year. He was that, he was that seventh, maybe sixth to seventh, eighth, sixth to seventh guy. But, St. Louis was good enough that he was just getting tons of opportunities with the lead. All right, man. Michael, unless you got somebody else that you want to mention as a target, we can just close out.
Yeah, no, those were the only three I got.
No, that's perfect. All right. So, before we close out here, just want to thank you for coming on the show. Great information, and let everybody know where they can find you on Twitter and online and what you got going on this season, man.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. You can follow me on Twitter at SP Streamer. Check out our website, spstreamer.com. We have a really cool membership there with a Discord chat. Where you could like talk to me and the other analysts 24/7. We do leagues. Nice. We do all kinds of things in there, which is a lot of fun. So you could always check that out. Posting articles too every week. And just grinding away as everyone else is.
Yeah.
Especially now the lockout's finally over. It's go, go, go.
Yeah.
It's pretty nuts. So, all right, man. Well, thank you again for coming on. It was a great time. We'll have to do it again, man.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right.
Have a good night.
Thanks, Mike. Have a good night, man.
You
too. Alrighty, AJ. I think that's it. So next week, I believe we're back on Thursday doing – we're going to touch on some of these. Sure. Yeah. Are you sure? Because you didn't remember this week.
I don't know. No.
All right. Anyway.
No, not at all.
So next week, we're back on Thursday. We're going to kind of break down some of these, hopefully all of the free agent signings. come on, guys. Get it done. Season's starting right around the corner.
Yeah.
But we'll touch on whatever happened since the last time we did it, which was a month and a half ago. So all these latest ones, we'll touch on those. And then in 2 weeks, on a Wednesday, I'll have to ping you a day early. Set your phone reminder or something, man.
Yeah, you know, I would ping Mike me Curlin. On Tuesday.
Yeah, Mike, I tried to, kind of. I thought you remembered. But no, you didn't. Bring it on, Mike Curlin, to discuss some of the spring training performances and what we're learning from spring training as the season gets closer. So that's all I've got. And yeah, we'll have to close it out there and see y'all next week. Peace.
Bye-bye. Go Hokies.